folks who don't know, the Free State Project is a movement of voluntary human action where we are trying to concentrate libertarians in the state of New Hampshire.
I think we've done more in the last decade than every other libertarian movement combined has accomplished in the last 5 decades.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, libertarians and anarchists, movers, natives, and those on your way, thanks for tuning into another episode of Live Free and Thrive Free State Live. I'm losing my mind tonight. Screw it. Let's just jump right in and do it live. It's been a long weekend for everybody. Welcome everyone back. As always, I'm Justin O'Donnell, former Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate, author of Live Free and Thrive, 101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, and so should you. Joining me, as always, we've got everyone's favorite keyboard warrior, Kevin from the Internet. How are you, Kevin?
I think that was your first fumble on the intro, so that's
in 2 years. Good, I mean, first fumble. Yeah. I'll take it.
It's a good track record.
I know. Usually, fumbling is Tall Bill's job, and that's why he's here, right?
Hey, fumbling not at the Porkfest football game. I won't be fumbling. I was just talking about that with Kevin.
Yes,
I'll be catching passes, Randy Moss style, one-handed.
Perfect.
Well, we just got done with our Liberty Forum. Everyone's kind of getting back in the swing of things after losing some weekends. Daylight savings time, which, I mean, I totally think we need a bill to abolish daylight savings time. My sleep schedule hasn't been right in 6 months. But a lot of what we do here, making content, helping spread the word about the Free State Project, the community, the mission, and the values of liberty here. And there's so many people in our sphere that make content for people like us, people who are ready to hear that message, and a lot of it's kind of driven towards education and reform and teaching children, but not many people are actually making content geared toward children to teach these values, to start them young, and to help, like, you know, maybe multiply our numbers and grow our movement organically. And that's why I wanted to have Sean on tonight. And we got Sean Dempsey, you know, businessman, entrepreneur, activist involved with New Hampshire Mises Caucus, and author of multiple children's books about liberty and freedom. How are you, Sean?
Great. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me, Justin. Well,
thanks for coming on. So, I mean, as a content creator and author, I've published a couple books myself. I do a lot of stuff online. I understand why people want to get into spreading the word in that way. It's a really easy avenue. But what made you want to, like, write children's books? I mean, I know you told us a little bit of the background of it this past last weekend at Liberty Forum for those who were there. But what is it that motivated you to want to, like, write children's books and get into that avenue of kind of content creation to spread any kind of message?
Sure. I'd be happy to kind of, for the benefit of your crowd and hopefully those who were at Liberty Forum at the adverse effect of repeating myself, I'll just kind of say the reason I got into publishing children's books, writing children's books, is completely selfish reasons. I have a young daughter, and I wanted to give her a message that I think would resonate with her. And over the course of COVID specifically, we were having a real hard time having levels of conversation that would help explain some of the madness that was happening. And it got me very riled up. She could see it was getting both me and her mother, now my wife, riled up, I mean, agitated. And it was hard to kind of come down to a 5-year-old level and explain, you know, we're trying to have conversations like, sometimes people do crazy things. And, well, why do people do crazy things? Well, let's explain, you know, why, you know, following the crowd, you know, and being like lemmings and kind of, those sort of conversations, you know, had to take root. And so, long story short, just putting this into a format that a 5-year-old could resonate with was really important for me as a father. And then as, you know, I kind of put these tales together, you know, it kind of took shape faster than I expected to write a book that would maybe appeal to others who are having similar challenges with their children.
Well, that's a perfect, I mean, the first time I think I met you or saw you was at Porkfest a few years ago, right after you had finished putting out, I think, the first children's book, and you were on a table and I was walking around with my now 3-year-old who was in the back of a wagon refusing to go to sleep. So I was like, all right, let's go walk around. And we head toward the Mises Caucus tent laser light show. So he's instantly enamored with that, but very quickly found you and started chatting with you with my wife, and walked away being like, hey, as a guy, or the both of us having been like in education and working with kids for most of our life, where this is something that's sorely lacking within our community. And A, you were the guy who was providing it, which was like out of the blue at 9 p.m. at Porkfest. Here's a guy like shilling children's books. But it's perfect because I'm walking by with a 2-year-old who's not sleeping, and here it is. I'll take one for the road. Cool. You know, and then again, I think you have a second one out today that I was, you know, just kind of looking it up again and like reviewing that book, seeing like, oh, all right, you're still working on this. And I've talked about, and Justin was making fun of me, he's like, everybody's had the idea of a children's book, but like I worked with kids for a long time, and like in my head I've pitched 10 different ideas for children's books. So it's fantastic to see somebody creating that thing. And I can write you lesson plans and stuff all day, but that doesn't convey the message, and it doesn't convey the ideas, which is what is very hard to do and explain some of these things to a 5-year-old or a 3-year-old or a 10-year-old. So perfect niche to fill. I'm fascinated with the process and everything else that's probably behind it.
So Sean, without sort of like giving away your secret sauce or spoiling the books for everybody, what's the premise? How do you sell this to kids? You know, how do you sell the idea to kids?
Well, not to flip the script on you, Bill, but I don't do any span of time selling it to kids. The whole idea, or what I've been kind of doing, is, you know, get in front of the parents, obviously.
Okay, so let me rephrase that, because I don't really mean sell it to kids. I guess I mean how do you convey the idea without having the you know, you said the conversations were hard to have around COVID, you know, about like people going with crowds, peer pressure, people doing crazy things. How are you conveying these ideas, you know, to children? Like, what, you know, because I guess I'm trying to ask you a leading question here.
No, I know I was just messing around with my previous answer. I was trying to save the comedy for you. But yeah, to answer your question, so first of all, just to back up, I think what was really important for me, or what allowed these ideas to take shape, and I'll go into a little bit of the weeds in a second, but I feel like to write any book, and I'm sure, you know, Justin, you probably can speak to this too, is you need to be really passionate about the topic. You know, you can't just be lackluster jumping into this and hope I'm just going to wake up and write a book today, because it takes a tremendous amount of energy and effort and time and willpower and blood, sweat, and tears. So for me, I think it's, you know, and the reason I'm starting with that is because I needed to be, and I was, so every day it seems like I would wake up seething over the situation that was happening in 2020 and 2021 and even the 2022 and 2023 now. So it's kind of it's really ridiculous how long this kind of phenomenon is kind of extending. But I struggled finding a way to kind of get the message that is very, I'd say, pregnant with meaning, out there and distilled in a way that would be work for children. And in the book I started with, which was Tale of Two Brothers, it was basically the tale, I'll just kind of get into a little bit. It was about, are you really living when you're not experienced life? I'm trying to distill that concept, which is a very big concept for kids. And breaking that down in a way that makes sense to children is very difficult. They're, you know, it's a conceptual thing, and sometimes concepts are, certainly ones like that, are a hard time really to get through. And in many ways, frankly, you can read this book, and a lot of kids do, and they have to read it a couple times, and they're going to have the parents there kind of, you know, going along asking leading questions, because you got to get through this and kind of take out the nuggets of truth kind of bit by bit. Because, you know, again, for that particular book, there's two brothers, one who's in a hut, basically, he wants to shield himself from pain and from anguish, both emotional and physical. So he winds up staying, ever since he's a kid, in this hut and retreating away and kind of being a recluse. And the other brother decides to go out to the world, and he gets married and he hikes and, you know, he has a family, he experiences life, he swims in the ocean, he goes out and experiences crowds, you know, as reckless as that is. And so, you know, he basically watch his life unfold, and he finally comes back and he confronts his brother, and he says, I'm back. And the brother who's been reclusive the whole time is like, stay away from me, I don't want to get too close to you. But, you know, he's like, well, brother, I don't know. You've missed the forest for the trees. He doesn't say this because that's a phrase that obviously kids wouldn't get. But he's like, you've survived, but you haven't lived. You know, he's going through this kind of conversation with him and saying, listen, I've climbed mountains. I've lived. I have my kids. I would give up everything for one moment with them. Whereas you've sacrificed your entire life on the altar of living. And that's very difficult. And so finally, at the very end of the book, I don't want to give anything more, but the brother actually, the brother that lived, he winds up dying early. And the brother who, lives in his shack, he lives in for another, 20 years. But the question that it's kind of asked, I guess, implicitly at the end is who actually lived and who just survived, and just walking through that and not even asking the question outright, but just letting the pictures and the book and the kind of story guide you kind of invites conversation. So, and a lot of people who have read the book with their kids, they kind of ask the question, they ask very leading questions like, what did you think about the brother? Why did you think he did this? Why do you think he acted this way? Why do you think that he was happy? Kind of basic questions like that. Like, how do emotions play into this? Why do you think how do you think the other brother felt when the other brother, I want to mention their names because you want to say something for the folks that want to read the book. But, so asking these questions, I think, leads to kind of fleshing out these topics in a way. And so I don't know if I'm directly answering your question, but basically trying to take a very, very high level or meta concept and bring it down to a story is the way that I've been able to translate some of these concepts, a story that hopefully the kids can resonate with.
Yeah, no, you totally answered my question. And I guess what I was really trying to lead you to is like, the parallel stories of like two people going through the same world, essentially from the same background, having totally different, risk tolerances or even perceived risk tolerances. And like, what, saying that to kids and then, basically you're asking a kid, what is adventure worth? And kind of like getting them thinking about that, right? Because that's a really important question to have going forward in life. Well, it's very cool. I think you did a great job with that one. I haven't seen the second one yet.
I thank you so much for that. And by the way, and again, Kevin, I mentioned this earlier. I just wanted to say how much I appreciate meeting you and your family and for the fact that you've picked up my book. Again, it really, as an author, I cannot tell you the emotional experience it is having someone read your book and resonate with it, whether it's real or not, but I really love the idea that people are getting meaning out of this. But Bill, just to go something on piggyback on something you just said, it's just to be clear, it's more than just adventure. I want to be very clear about this. I think the problem with the last couple years is that people didn't just give up on taking hikes or experiencing a thrill. They gave up on their lives. I mean, that's what made me so passionate about this topic. I had family members that wouldn't leave their house, that wouldn't have Thanksgiving dinner, that wouldn't do things that allowed them to experience what I would say makes life worth living, because they were so fearful of something esoteric and opaque. They were giving up something real in order to avoid something that they couldn't even see. It was kind of like missing, not being able to go to the kitchen and get food because you were so scared of the boogeyman. It was very, very akin to that. And getting those concepts is what I think the point of that particular book was about.
Yeah, it's true. It was not even necessarily just adventure, but I think it's like it in the age of lockdowns, it applies to like daily life. How much of your like regular sustenance are you willing to live? But I think the book will be timeless because just looking at that as like a blueprint for, I guess, like, well, living, right? It's just living, whether you're in a very high risk environment where maybe there is like a deadly virus and you should be careful when you go outside. Maybe it's just a cold, mm-hmm. But whether there's anything crazy going on outside or not, if you don't take risks, you're never gonna live. So, but you got to make your own assessment. What is worth it to you? It's like.
That's right.
Clearly those two people had very different opinions.
It's a perfect lesson. And like my son is too young to understand the high concepts. Like the Chonk is a smart kid, but he is still like a 3-year-old and has no idea what's going on. But he is like, we're doing potty training right now. New things are scary, right? These are concepts that kids understand. And again, you can start to delineate that information by going like, new things are scary, but new things can be fun. So like, here's an example. It might be scary to go outside to go try swimming because you're nervous that you don't know how to swim, but is it more fun to stay inside and do nothing with your whole life? No. So get in the car, we're going swimming. And yeah, and you can start to introduce those same concepts. And like, I know that your second book a little bit more than these guys too. So like, there are also timeless things that hold true in all stories, and you want to convey those things to your kids. And like, you know, I saw right away thinking like the Amazon description of the next one of like the Emperor's New Clothes. So this isn't a new story, but you can retell these things in a different way or reframe it in a way for a different age group or a different group of people, or in this case, like a libertarian audience, you know, parents that are looking to supplement homeschooling or to raise their kids a certain way, or, you know, again, bridge the gap from like, what do I do with my 2-year-old till he gets to be 8? Or like someone said, till he can read Atlas Shrugged or whatever, you know, start with Anthem. It's easier.
Right. That's always my difficulty. And like, Sean, when I write a lot. Like last year, I wrote over 250,000 words in different blogs, articles, and a couple different books.
You're inspiring.
But the thing I've always struggled with is kind of dumbing it down. Like, and I've even had an editor tell me, it's like, hey, you need to stop writing at a postgraduate level. People aren't going to read it unless you can dumb it down to like an 8th grade reading level. And my answer was like, I don't want those people reading it anyways. That's not my audience. I'm writing for people who already understand these concepts. And I could never write a children's book because I don't write in the way that can speak to children and teach children. I write in more of a way that's argumentative and forcing people to challenge preconceptions that they have and have an internal discussion and internal monologue along with what they read. It's two completely and wildly different styles. And as far as like, you're right, being passionate about what you're writing, when I find a topic I'm passionate about and I start writing, next thing I know, I've lost an entire day and have 9,000 words written and have to trim it before I can publish the article. But when I get an assignment for an article or a research piece that I am not really personally invested in, I will sit there for a week and a half to come up with 1,500 words that I'm not satisfied with by the end of the day. Yeah. Like, how have you taken to finding stories to tell children that are kind of easy or easy for you to reframe in a way to teach those children, and ones that simultaneously you're passionate about telling, and this is a story you're passionate about saying.
Yeah. Well, I think in many ways, I've heard this expression before. I find it cliche, but it's true in this case. Both these stories I've written two now, and I'll be working on a third soon. But they wrote themselves in the fact that again, the passion was there. The fodder for these stories was right in front of me. Again, you have the world collapsing on itself. You have people acting insane, and it's just a matter of getting it to the forefront that was difficult. But to also piggyback or answer your question, I think that the most timeless tales of our generation, whether it's movies or some of my favorite books, are not brand new material. I think there isn't, you know, I think a lot of great writers better than me have said there's no new material under the sun. The best material is that which is timeless and can be readapted for kind of modern societal and cultural, you know, things that are happening at the present day. So that's why, you know, again, in Ava and the Storm, which is my new book, again, I really piggybacked on another timeless tale, which was Emperor's New Groove. One of my favorite movies, by the way.
Great movie.
The Emperor's Clothes, which if everyone is, I think most people, I would hope, is familiar with that tale. If not, I'll kind of distill it. But it's basically the tale of an emperor who wants to get the finest clothes out there, and so he hires this. Or this guy, I guess, shows up basically at his doorstep and says, "I'm gonna knit you the finest clothes you've ever seen," but they can only be seen by wise people and smart people. And so the emperor, he goes away and he knits the clothes for him, and the emperor, you know, gets given these clothes and he can't see them, but he doesn't want to pretend. Or he doesn't want to let on that he can't see the clothes, because then, you know, the emperor is not wise. And again, I won't go into it all, but it basically gets to the heart of, you know, people are willing to completely forego reality. They're able to completely distill what's in front of them and what their eyes and every sense says in order to go on with a farce, if the farce either improves their lives doesn't make them look foolish, or if it helped their societies going along with it. There's actually something called the Ashe effect. Actually, it was a scientific study that was done in the 70s where the scientists got all these subjects into a room, and they were willing to actually forego the evidence of their eyes in order to go along with the group that was basically
scientists.
Yeah, 7 out of 10 people agreed with the lie when presented. So like there was a piece of pizza, it had 7 slices in it, and everyone said nope, there are 8. And when it got to somebody who was not in on it, just said 8 to go along with the group.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of speaks to, so what these studies have shown, I mean, this is scientifically backed up in this, you know, sounds like Kevin, you know a lot more about it even than I've just read the bullet points, but like these societal or I guess cultural norms, that is, it's psychological truths, which is people will be lemmings if it improves their well-being or allows them to fit in with others. I think it probably stems back to, you know, evolutionary science and biology, where, you know, people strayed off from the pack, they'd go get, you know, eaten by a dinosaur or something. So there's kind of like a societal, or excuse me, an evolutionary preternatural need to want to be in groups and want to go along with the herd. And so even when everyone is, or every sense in your eye, every sense in your head and saying that sky is blue and this feels like water, if the group says it doesn't, or it looks like, you know, they're saying it's red, you're going to go along with the group. And that is a sad thing about the state of our society and the state of, you know, psychological norms, I guess. But it needs to be understood that these things exist, and nothing's kind of pushed that harder than the COVID regime. And again, getting those kind of concepts distilled down to even, you know, again, the 5 or 6 year old kid, I think is important for this day and age, because if you don't learn it early on, you're gonna have a rude awakening. Like I frankly did. I would never have guessed 5 years ago that an entire world would go mad and believe things that they believe just because the elites told them. So I think it's kind of woken up a lot of people, including myself, to madness exists, and we need to fight it with every breath in our lungs.
Well, create the culture behind it. It's not just fight the madness and my hot takes on Twitter, but you're actually creating a tangible thing. And I think that does more than, again, all my hot takes on Twitter.
No, I'm doing a lot of shit posting on Twitter too. Don't worry.
Well, that's true. Sorry. Go ahead there, Bill.
Oh, I was just thinking, it's like, the people who go along with the 7 slices and 8 slices, it's like, even if the thought there, it must be like something along the lines of, even if I'm wrong, at least I won't be alone.
Mm. Yep.
You know, or if I, even if I know this is right, it's not worth being alone, which is like, man, that's unfortunately very powerful, I guess.
Social pressure.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's there's no other way to put it, Bill. It's unfortunately very sad that these truths exist. And again, I think that the last couple of years has kind of reinforced this idea in a way that I don't think any of us could have seen as vibrant as it's been demonstrated. So I don't know. I think we're still probably have years, if not decades, of kind of fleshing out these concepts, what they mean for our society, what they mean to us as libertarians, given that these things are true, that society will say up is down and down is up, if the herd is convincing them to do so, and they're willing to rat out their own family members to when they don't comply. I think, again, it's really jaded me, if you don't hear it in my voice, to a lot of the, I think before, 5 years ago, I would have said mankind, or at least society, is inherently heading in the right direction. And maybe that's very naive of me 5 years ago, but I couldn't disagree with that more now. I feel like if anything, the last couple of years have shown us just how far we are fallen. And again, I think these concepts need to be explained at a very young age so that we don't fall into the same traps, even if it's one kid at a time.
Absolutely. And we all know, as long as we, you know, if it saves one life, it's always worth it, right?
No matter the cost.
But no, we've had a couple people asking if they can see the book and get a little bit of a sneak peek. Oh. I'll do you one better.
We've got somebody requesting that you write an entire rework of Grimm's Fairy Tales for modern times. I don't know if we can pull that comment up. I can't grab it right now.
So your first two books are available on Amazon, right? Why don't you tell people where they can go get them? And
yep, everything's on Amazon. You can look me up by my name. Might be easiest. Or you actually, I'm getting surprisingly, I'm really excited about getting a lot of traffic just from typing in libertarian children's books. So I'm in the top of that list right now, which is really cool. Which is surprising, given like Connor Boyack is one of my all-time heroes of all time, and I'm actually above him in that particular category, which is fun. Connor Boyack having written the Tuttle Twins. So on the left there, the Tale of Two Brothers, which I described earlier, it's really a motif about lockdowns. I guess you want to distill it to one word. Ava and the Storm, actually, not that I should say show any partiality, but I am a little bit more partial. I do enjoy this book a little bit more. Because my daughter resonates it with a lot more. So we read this one a lot more in the house. My daughter's name is Ava. Again, I wrote these for purely selfish reasons. I'm sorry. I'm both a capitalist and a father, and that's why, someone who wants to get a message out. So for those three reasons, again, I write children's books. But my daughter's name is Ava. That is literally, I tried to, the best as my artist could render her. That's her actual frame there, at least a year ago. And the story of that one is, again, in that whole modality we were talking about before, where people will just follow along with the crowd, whether or not it makes sense or not. It harkens to the mask mandates and a lot of the COVID vaccine passports that were happening at the time. You have an island of people who are willing to do anything possible, anything they can to stop a storm from coming. A storm keeps ravaging the island. And a wise leader comes forth and says, well, we just need to hop on one foot and that will keep the storm at bay. And then the storm comes again, where he's like, you want to wear one glove on your hand and hop on one foot. And when that doesn't work, then it's, well, now you got to drink salt water until you can barely breathe. So all these things that are extremely, for anyone paying attention, and Ava speaks up like, I don't get why do these things stop the storm? But it's like, don't be a malcontent, I think at one point someone says to her. So there's some words thrown in there. I think there's an educational component in addition to the philosophy behind the books. There's, you get to kind of understand like, what do some of these words mean? I throw in every once in a while a word that maybe a first or second grader wouldn't get, and you can talk about these things. You have to read the book to figure out what happens, I'll just throw it out there. The drinking salt water and one foot does not stop the storm, believe it or not. So the cows are all swept away and the houses collapse because no one was willing to actually do the things that actually mattered. And maybe the storm, a lot of people brought this up, which is actually an unintended benefit of having an audience, but something I didn't necessarily intend, but it came forth very vividly to a lot of the audience who've read the book, is the message that, the storm itself can't be stopped. There's nothing that the townspeople could have done to stop the storm, but they could have spent their time a lot more wisely, like battening down the hatches, putting their cattle away, trying to stemmy or protect themselves as best they could. And they didn't do any of that. Instead, they assumed they were okay, which will let, give anything away, but that caused a lot more problems than if they hadn't, which again, if you study a lot of the data that just came out actually last week about Sweden, for example, just to bring this to a more tangible story. I mean, like what Sweden did with, not locking down and not enforcing mass mandates. Everyone was calling them crazy and vilifying that entire country for 2 years straight. I mean, you couldn't turn on the news without someone just completely just lambasting the entire country and leadership of Sweden. Now, fast forward 2 years from now, they have the lowest death rate between 2021 and 2023 of all European countries, because they did the same thing that every country has done since the dawn of mankind when an epidemic hit, which is try to establish herd immunity and protect those who are most at risk, which is exactly what Sweden did. But every other country is like, oh, as long as we have mask mandates, we'll be fine. And as long as we have our vaccines, we'll be fine. No. So again, I don't need to say it's an apples to apples equation. I mean, the book is there's a lot more nuance to a conversation that involves COVID and countries lockdown, stuff like that. But I think the underlying concepts do translate, and that's something I hope that parents and kids alike enjoy about the book.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And if ever you want to check out his books, like I said, I put the link in the description of these videos, so you can go right to that Amazon page, pick yourself up a copy. If you want to wait until you get to meet Sean in person, you're going to probably do it at Porkfest again this year. And it's going to sell out. We're getting there. It's going to be the biggest, craziest Porkfest ever. Porkfest.com. Get your tickets now. If you haven't made your reservations and gotten your campsite and everything already, you should really get on that, because you're going to be a half hour away by the time if you wait. No rush, but a little bit of a rush. Get your Porkfest tickets today. And if you want to learn more about what the Free State Project is doing and our mission, check out fsp.org for more information on the organization and the mission, and get in touch. Visit New Hampshire. You can get in touch with Chris and our staff at the FSP, and they can help you plan your visit. You can meet your future neighbors. You can meet Sean. You can meet Kevin. You can meet me and Bill. Come and meet who you're going to be integrating the rest of your life with in a free state for the future. And if you're already here, or while you're visiting and you want to find something to do, nothing better than checking out the Free State Project calendar. The biggest, most jam-packed Liberty calendar in the world. There's more than you could possibly do. You can give it a try, but I'm not sure you'll be able to ever do it. People have tried, but something every day in every corner of the state. There's so much going on, including, if I can pull this back up, coming up soon, we do have our screening of Ithaca, a documentary film about the Julian Assange issues going on that will be attended and with Julian Assange's brother. Documentaries about his father and the fight to free Julian from his incarceration for the crime of reporting the news and telling the truth to the people that the powerful elite didn't want to hear. That'll be at The Shell in Rawlinsford, New Hampshire, and you can go to tinyurl.com/Ithaca, New Hampshire to get your reservation for your tickets. March 23rd, 12 noon, and it's free. But it's not a big venue, so make sure you RSVP if you want to join us. And if you want to support the Free State Project's mission, fsp.org/give, 501c3, charitable, nonprofit. Your money doesn't go to Uncle Sam if you direct it somewhere better. Kevin?
Join the Discord. Lots of things happening. I'm planning a whole Discord calendar events just for Porkfest, so it's going to be a fun time. So join the Discord server.
Bill?
Even if you're not going to move, come visit.
Absolutely.
We're awesome.
All right. And Sean, anything you want to leave people on?
No, thank you so much for having me. If you want to check out the book, avaandthestorm.com will bring you right to the Amazon link. And thanks again for letting me talk and ramble on for as long as I did. I really appreciate it.
We appreciate you and everyone else doing the work to spread the message and ways that it needs to be spread. So thank you so much for coming on. And thank you everyone for joining. And until next time, be free.
I don't believe in destiny, I just do what's best for me. Don't listen to my enemies, they're just full of jealousy. This legacy, you gon' see what's left of me. You gon' see success in me, you ain't seen the rest of me.
I just wanna be the best at what I know, better than the rest, just watch me grow. Put me to the test and watch me go. This is my quest, I'ma make it known. They call me obsessive, oh I know. Call me selective with my notes. Call me aggressive with my flow. Call me offensive even though Joe, I ain't gonna lie.